All right, everybody, thanks for being here. I'm Clayton Pixton, and you are listening or maybe watching the Joseph Smith Impressions of a Prophet podcast with Susan Easton Black. And I'm Clayton Pixton.
And I'm Susan Easton Black, and looking forward to tonight.
That's right. We got some pretty interesting things to go over. Last time we talked about kind of the end of the independence era and how they got kicked out up to
Clay County.
Clay County.
Yep.
Was that the vote that voted us to hell or whatever?
Is that that's coming tonight.
That's okay. Yeah. All right. Well, some heavy stuff. I'm going to do a little intro for us. We're talking about the Call of the 12, correct, Susan?
Right. Call of the 12, Clay County.
So this is ye elders of Israel to go along with that call. Ye elders of Israel, come join now with me and seek out the righteous where'er they may be. In desert, on mountain, on land, or on sea, and bring them to Zion, the pure and the free. O Babylon, O Babylon, we bid thee farewell. We're going to the mountains of Ephraim to
Thanks,
there
Clayton,
you go.
I love that.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Susan, I don't want to delay us any longer, so tell us where we're going today. We already ended last time in
We kind of ended in Clay County, a little town called Liberty, and we'll pick it up a little bit, review a little bit tonight. So our topic is Clay County, the Call of the 12, and then we eventually get established far west. I think you'll find it fascinating. Well, all right. Clay County, the Call of the 12, and here we go. Last time we left off, we were talking about the saints as refugees, as they've come out of Jackson County. Remember, they were in independence, and they were then forced out of their homes in November of 1833. They were forced to the river, and the saints will then cross the Missouri River and move on up to Liberty in Clay County.
Forced out kind of for no other reason than they were
too many. It was oil and water. You recall the neighbors, they just didn't get along. The saints are calling it their promised land, their New Jerusalem. And they're trying to live the law of consecration and stewardship, and it just didn't work with the old settlers in the frontier town of Independence. So off they now go, as they do. We recall last time we learned a lot about Zion's camp, and Joseph Smith was then the leader. And we also know, as we move now into Clay County, here's what the county looks like. You can see the county lines. It borders in Jackson County, Platte County, Clinton County, Ray County kind of thing. And we know that Joseph Smith then had a group that was called Zion's Camp. Zion's Camp made an amazing march, about 800 miles. And we know that Zion's Camp was not able to redeem Zion, meaning put the saints back on their lands in Jackson County. We know that Joseph Smith will eventually return to Kirtland, but will actually come over into Clay County and will designate who are the presidents then of the stake in Clay County. Notice who is the president. We get David Whitmer, a man that's been selected at one point to be one of the three witnesses to the Book of Mormon. Well, he's the president. He selects as his counselors, first counselor, is W.W. Phelps. I recall W.W. Phelps, he eventually will write The Spirit of God Like a Fire is Burning. He's the man that ran the print shop there in Independence, that Evening and Morning Star newspaper, and also attempted to publish then the Book of Commandments that we would call it today the Doctrine and Covenants. For David, he will select as his second counselor his brother, John Whitmer. John Whitmer at the time was basically a church historian, a recorder type, and the three men that are placed in charge of these saints that are now refugees from Jackson County, trying to start life anew for themselves as they wait for a season to be able to return back to their lands of inheritance in Jackson County. In the meantime, where is Joseph? Well, Joseph Smith will now leave Clay County. He will travel the distance of about 800 miles and return back to Kirtland. While he's in Kirtland, he does a major push with the Latter-day Saints and asks them, through him, to give money that is to be sent to the poor and bleeding in Clay County. So you've got now the saints in Kirtland, about 2,500, sending money to the poor and bleeding in Clay County, and we're about 1,200 or so there, with the idea that those that have suffered, that they will be able to get their own houses, start their own shops, and have a chance to enjoy life better. In the meantime, we will leave Clay County for a moment and notice all the money that Joseph is able to collect and send on will be sent to the presidency then of the stake in Clay County. So David Whitmer, W.W. Phelps, and then you get John Whitmer. In the meantime, Zion's camp, many of them have arrived back in Kirtland. When they arrived back, Joseph concluded they should have a reunion. And we're all familiar with high school reunions, college reunions, whatever it might be. But Joseph wanted to have a reunion of those that had marched with Zion's camp. And notice the day he holds that reunion. It's Valentine's Day. So when my husband forgets to get flowers or whatever it is, I always go, it's a good day, you know. It's a reunion day, and it will be the day that the Quorum of the Twelve is called. So on Valentine's Day in 1835, you get all the men that could be come, and they attend this reunion. And at the reunion, Joseph Smith will invite the men that had been the witnesses of the Book of Mormon, so Martin Harris, Oliver Cowdery, David Whitmer, to pray to the Lord and to select who should be his 12 apostles. I like this because you get the three witnesses are now invited to select the special witnesses for Jesus Christ. Now, as they do so, the word apostle means one who is sent. So if you know an apostle that's sitting home too long, you know, he needs to be up and going. He is sent. He's got a message. And so these three men will now call out the names of the original Quorum of the Twelve. And notice most of the names they called out were then those that had been on the march with Zion's camp. So featured here, you get Joseph Smith's brother, William Smith. You get Parley P. Pratt, Heber C. Kimball, Orson Hyde. And you'd be able to say, well, that's pretty interesting. Well, who's the first name called out? And the first name called out by the three witnesses was Lyman Johnson, and he was 23 years old at the time. You know, try and imagine, you know, if you were to look at our Quorum of the Twelve today, and say, you know, average age, you got to be, I don't know, 70s, you know, going on, moving towards 80, right? But you'd say the first Quorum of the Twelve, notice they're young. Lyman Johnson was the first name called out. Brigham Young at the time is 34. Thomas Reed Marsh is 36. David W. Patton is 36. Joseph Smith will step forward and will welcome these men as the Quorum of the Twelve, but then Joseph will put them in order according to age. Notice today, the Quorum of the Twelve, it's according to seniority. From the time they've been called to the Twelve, they then begin their service. But the first Quorum of the Twelve was put together according to age. So where Lyman Johnson was the first name called off. He goes in 12th position. He's our youngest. So first called, last, right? Brigham Young is number three. And you'd say David W. Patton, he couldn't remember when he was born. And, you know, everybody concluded, hey, Thomas, you look older. Thomas, you be president of the 12. So you've got a quorum then of the 12, ages 36 to 23. And you'd say there's the good and the bad with that. They're not seasoned members of the church. They haven't spent, you know, 30, 40 years taking sacrament, you know, serving in bishoprics, other types of callings. And suddenly they've got a major calling. Well, what happens with these men? We're going to find that if you wanted to know all of their names, you could open your Doctrine and Covenants, and just like you're going to find the testimony of the three witnesses in the Book of Mormon, you can open your Doctrine and Covenants, and you'll find the testimony of the 12 apostles indicating their willingness to say yes, that the revelations contained in the Doctrine and Covenants are indeed revelations of the Lord. So that's where you'll find your name, and featured here is Brigham Young. Well, what happens to the Quorum of the 12? You'd say, you've got 12 men called, right? But you'd look at their lives, and you'd say, how many stayed faithful all the days of their lives? And you'd say, well, Brigham Young, he's your man. jumps forward, Heber C. Kimball, all the days of his life. There's some question about the other man there, David W. Patton. Some would question his faithfulness, but dies a member of the church. But then you look and you say, well, what about the other nine? Come on, you guys, hang in. And we know that there are some, like Thomas B. Marsh, that will leave the church for a season and will eventually come back after 18 years. And so you'd say, well, there's one. What about the others? You'd say for Orson Hyde, he's out for a short time. Orson Pratt, he's out for a short time, partly, probably the shortest. And then Luke Johnson out for about 8 years and comes back and becomes a bishop in Utah. And so you'd look and you'd say, well, three stayed faithful. What about the ones we looked at? We'd say they're in and out of the church, right? But eventually coming back. What about the others? Those who never returned to church fellowship. We've talked about before John F. Boynton, but Joseph's brother, William Smith. William Smith, at the death of Joseph, he was called as the patriarch of the church, especially with the death of Hiram. And he never could wrap his arms around that Brigham Young is going to lead the church. William actually formed a church of his own, took him out to Kentucky. And Brigham Young said of his church that William's church was so popular that William was his quorum of the 12 and also his congregation. So you'd say William didn't do very well in attracting that many people to his cause and eventually ends up a member of the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So you can find, even among the 12, those that never will return to fellowship. And then you also find among the 12 those that fight against the church. William McClellan forms his own church. Lyman Johnson becomes a judge as the saints are crossing Iowa. He figures out a reason to have several of them brought into court and charging them. So very, very difficult. Notice this kind of maps on the same with what we've talked about. There's always now a choice. And as we've talked about this choice before and kind of been a theme as we've gone through, you know, choose you this day whom you will serve. Obviously, Brigham Young made that choice and he stayed with it all his days. Thomas B. Marsh featured. He made the choice once, but then he changed his mind, and then he makes the choice again. And John F. Boynton and others, they'll make the choice, fall away, and never come back. And then William McClellan makes the choice and then fights against the church. Well, in the meantime, as we've learned something about the 12, we now return again to Clay County. And you'd say, well, how are the saints doing in Clay County? We're going to pause here for a moment because we're going to find that the saints in Clay County, they've literally moved to an area where you're saying they're living among the cousins of those in Jackson County. The people in Clay County, like those in Jackson, they're from Kentucky. They are Southerners. They have slaves. And you'd say, how are the saints? Well, they basically have come from the East. They're in New York, Vermont. And, it's the same kind of thing, trying to mix water and oil. At first, those in Clay County liked us because we're helping them as we don't have much funds, right? We're helping them in their homes. But suddenly, when we want to be their neighbors, and we're going to vote and everything else that caused so much problem in Jackson County. We're there in Clay County from the end of 1833 until 1836. And during that time, by 1836, the fathers of Clay County get together and they conclude, we don't like the Latter-day Saints any more than our cousins did in Jackson County. In other words, you guys don't work for us. And so the question is, what are we going to do? And they don't want to burn us out like was done in Jackson County. We live kind of separate. In Clay County, we're living among the people. And so you burn them out, suddenly you're going to burn out your friend's house too. And with that in mind, the question is, they tried to figure out what to do with the saints. And finally, their conclusion was, let's hold a vote. And the vote was, we think the saints should go to hell. But then the next question was, what's the closest place to hell on earth? And their conclusion was Wisconsin. So for all you people in Wisconsin, I apologize. No, at least that's what those in Clay County thought. And so they thought, you know, okay, move on to Wisconsin. Well, representing Clay County at that point was a man named Alexander Doniphan. Now, Alexander Doniphan, he represents Clay County in the Missouri legislature. His father had fought in the Civil War or in the Revolutionary War. He's a lawyer by trade. He's a man of great prominence, and his conclusion was, you can't tell people in the United States where they have to live. In other words, that's not right. It's not, his thing was, you know, everything has to be just for Doniphan. And so his conclusion, although he's representing this county, he knows their vote. He knows that Clay County wants to push him to Wisconsin. Doniphan literally ramrods through the Missouri legislature a bill that ultimately will create two counties in unincorporated land. So to the credit of Doniphan, here's your two counties he creates. In other words, Missouri was claiming all this space but hadn't divided it all into counties. And so through the efforts of Doniphan and then signed into law by the governor, two counties were created. One was Caldwell County and the other was Davies County. Both are named after Doniphan's father's Revolutionary War friends. And so Caldwell County, in essence, was to be a Mormon type of reservation, much like you'd say Indian reservations. And the Latter-day Saints could live in Caldwell County, but they couldn't go into Daviess County. In other words, you confine yourself to one county. I think it's all going to work.
Was that clear in the beginning that they were supposed to stay there?
Well, it wasn't so clear in the beginning, but we're going to find that when the extermination order literally goes into effect, it's when Joseph Smith dares to go up into Daviess County and found a town called Adam-on-Diamond. And suddenly, that's it. You know, what are you doing? We're going to exterminate. We're going to move you on out. You can't live among us. So I don't think the Latter-day Saints understood it, that they were at the time to stay in Caldwell County. But what they understood was they have a place to go. It's still close enough to Jackson County that when this little season is over, we can get back and then build up our Zion kind of New Jerusalem community. So with that, with this Caldwell County, you get our three leaders there in Clay County, David Whitmer, W.W. Phelps, and David's brother John, that they head up to Caldwell County to check it out. In other words, we're going to go up there and see if we can find a piece of land that would look good. And they do so, and they found the town called Far West. And they literally map it all out. And as they do so, notice what they've done. They take this land, minus the telephone poles, right? Mm-hmm. They take this land where you say, hey, just it's all growing wild. They literally divide it into parcels. And they even designate, with Joseph not even being there, conclude, well, hey, the center of town. Joseph likes the center of town. We're going to put that as Temple Square. And we're literally going to put land all around it and all around the Temple Square. We will put our shops. Well, okay. By the time Joseph Smith now arrives in Far West, and our year is 1837. So we now have the saints literally all in one place. So where there was Kirtland, we've gone through the Kirtland Safety Society, and everybody that still calls himself a saint has now moved on to Missouri, and the main place they're heading to is Far West, and then from there they may settle in Hans Mill or some other little town. But by the time 1837, Joseph Smith arrives in Far West, he finds the town is actually pretty amazing. He can see where the Temple Square has been designated. He can see that it has two hotels. It has five general stores. It has livery stables. I mean, he's kind of looking, and he's starting to see prosperity all around. And he sees a lot of Latter-day Saints. He's actually pretty thrilled. And as he walks around Temple Square to the little stores and the hotel, he'll see one of his friends and he'll say, oh, you know, last time I saw you in Clay County, you were one of the poor and bleeding, you know, you were a refugee. And look at you now, you now own a hotel. And the man will say, well, I manage the hotel. But who owns a hotel is David Whitmer, W.W. Phelps, John Whitmer. Oh, Joseph's surprised. He heads to the little general stores where they're selling, you know, boots and other things and, you know, goods. And he says, oh, you know, last time I saw you, you were in one of the poor refugees from Jackson County. And I'm thrilled. Look at this. You got yourself a store. You got yourself a livery stable. You've got, you know, the wagon shop, that whatever they've got. And the man will say, well, I manage it. And that I don't own these. These are owned by David Whitmer. You got this? John Whitmer, W.W. Phelps. Well, all right. So you'd say, Joseph's very concerned. He moves out. He's with his wife, Emma. And you'd say, Joseph is living on the outskirts of town with the poor. And he sees the poor, and he talks to his neighbors, and he wonders, you know, he goes, money was sent to bless your lives. And when I saw you, you were one of the poor and bleeding of Zion, and, you know, your lot isn't a lot better. And then, you know, basically, do you need help with budgeting? You know, money came your way. And they're going, what money? And so you'd say, the money wasn't passed out. So money Joseph had sent to the poor and bleeding in Zion, you got the stake presidency, like sticky-fingered ward clerks. They're holding on him, but we're going to go back to the one to kind of give you an idea how poor Joseph is. There are accounts where he says to Emma, you know, set the table. Hey, we're going to get ready, but they don't have any food. But they've got their kids, they got their house, and Joseph now prays to the Lord to ask someone to bring his family some food. And then invariably, they sit, they wait at the table, there's a knock at the door, and you get the embarrassed neighbor. I don't know, you know, I didn't mean to kill so many chickens, my wife, I'm sure you don't need this, and here's pie, and here's, you know, this and that. And then Joseph will come back, and he will offer a second prayer on the food, and ask the Lord to bless the individual and his family for all generations of time, that that family will never want for a loaf of bread. So, for example, one of those who came by and brought food to the prophet Joseph and Emma and their children was a man named John Tanner. And he was one of those, hey, I'm sure you don't need this. I don't know why, but hey, here you go. And Joseph blessed him that he and his family would never want for a loaf of bread. So, you know, posterity. When somebody's saying, hey, they're getting married, and I go, you know, don't ask what the parents' net worth is. Just ask what their last name is, and is it Tanner, right? Yeah. And, you know, guarantee for yourself. But Joseph is now very upset with Farwest, although it's prosperous.
And part of the reason he's kind of in poverty at this point, right, is because, he's having to work while he's trying to manage the church. And he had asked the high council or the church to help support his family so that he could operate in his calling. And they voted against.
Yeah, the high council voted no. And, you know, I've had a chance, Clayton, to search all of their lives. And, you know, as you judge, you will be judged. And, you know, each one of those high council men that voted no, they would not support Joseph and Emma for that year. Each one of them had an occasion in which they literally needed a loaf of bread. So very, very difficult times, despite what appears to be very prosperous. Well, for Joseph, he now goes to David Whitmer and John Whitmer and W.W. Phelps and says, hey, I want to see the books. And notice he's just coming off the Kirtland Safety Society, where, you know, $40,000 is missing from the society, where the average investor is getting back 12 and a half cents on the dollar. And suddenly he comes and he wants to see the books. And David Whitmer, Phelps, and John Whitmer say to Joseph, you don't have any authority. If you want to be president of the church, you be president. You're the president of the church in Ohio. We're the presidency of the church in Missouri. In other words, you have no authority over us. At which point Joseph says, I'll hold court. You know, in other words, I'm going to, you know, call the high council together. We're going to hold court over this. And you get each of the three men conclude, hey, do you think we can just slip Joseph $1,000 and no hard feelings? You know, we're just going to slip you some money and, you know, we'll just, you know, just kind of forget it. It's, you know, and Joseph goes court in session. So one of the interesting things I found in reading Joseph's writing, you'd say, oh, he has, you know, makes the J so perfect and the O and the S. But then you'd say, well, how is it for you, Joseph, in 1838? And it's like he's writing like an old man. He's shaking, you know, because what's now happened? He's lost so many friends in Kirtland over the Kirtland Safety Society. And now he's coming, facing literally another financial crisis. So you'd say, wow, there goes W.W. Phelps. And I've always liked it when Phelps comes back. He does Joseph's funeral eulogy. And in the eulogy, he writes that poem, Praise to the Man. Praise to the man who communes with Jehovah. Millions shall know Brother Joseph again. And here we are, Clayton, among the millions. This is pretty great, huh? And you'd say, well, what about John Whitmer? He's out. When he goes, he takes the records with him. And you're like, wow, John, we're trying to pull the history of the church together, the records of membership. And he leaves the church, he goes, and he never comes back. And then David Whitmer, we've talked about, he heads over to Richmond, and David's out. So high council courts are held against these men. And this is always Far West. Far West is the place of high council courts.
I think my handwriting would be pretty shaky too, not just from the financial stuff, but just all the church people leaving the
church.
The leadership just like not only leaving but kind of turning around against you, some of them.
Yeah. And just horrible,
And speaking of all this darkness about Far West, what do you say about the idea that Far West was the location where Cain slew Abel?
Cain slew Abel. So when you talk about independence, depending on who's telling the story, they'll say Garden of Eden. And then you start looking and say, okay, Adam and Eve, which way are you going? And north. You can find in some of the old writings that right by the Temple Square was the place where Cain killed Abel. And then when you finally get to Adam on Diamond, we know that Adam was there and blessed his posterity and told him all the things that would happen for generations. So when you look at Missouri, you're right there, Clayton. I mean, you know, the best of times, the worst of times, the beginning of times, the end of times. And that's a pretty significant place. But Far West is always known as the place of high council courts. So who else loses their membership then in Far West? And you'd say, well, Oliver Cowdery, that's where he loses his membership. Orson Hyde, the same thing, John F. Boynton. In other words, when Joseph left Kirtland, he didn't have the time to hold high council courts. He's moving fast. So always the place where these, you know, disciplinary councils at their time were held, it's always Far West.
Because it's these three here, Oliver Cowdery, Orson Hyde, and John Boynton, they kind of left themselves in the Kirtland, around
yeah,
Kirtland, is that right?
Yeah, Boynton is leaving himself in the Kirtland area. Oliver Cowdery, well, he's actually come to Missouri, but he will, you know, he's gone from Kirtland to Missouri, and the same with Orson Hyde. Orson Hyde will actually sign an affidavit with Thomas B. Marsh claiming that Joseph Smith is like a modern Mohammed and arming Indians and sending it to Lilburn W. Boggs, the governor. So difficult times, but I think the big remembrance is Far West is always the courts. Okay, others who will lose their membership in Far West, the Johnson brothers. Remember Father John Johnson in Hiram, Ohio, and Tar and Feathering. Luke and Lyman Johnson will lose their membership there in Far West. Luke will return to the church, Lyman never, and Thomas B. Marsh, President of the 12th, will lose his membership there in Far West, but will ultimately come back to the church. Well, what have we learned tonight? We know that in Far West, notice, you look at Kirtland, you can find 48 revelations. You look in Hiram, you can find 16 revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants. Look at the number of revelations in Far West, despite the fact that Joseph is there, not for a great length of time, but you get the name of the church, section 115. You get tithing, but you can see 7 revelations. And you go, why no more? And I go, well, you know what Joseph's doing? He's trying to eke out a living for his family. He's holding court. And notice in one of those revelations that Joseph is told, inasmuch as there are those among you who deny my name. Okay, in other words, that's what's been going on. And we've seen it, from the day one as the saints now come up to Far West. Inasmuch as there are those among you who deny my name, others shall be planted in their stead. In other words, remember the 12, 9 members are out. Others will be planted in their stead. And who's planted in their stead? Well, John Taylor's going to come in. Wilford Woodruff's coming in. George A. Smith. And the list kind of goes on. And you go, so our message tonight, I think, is caution. You know, you've been called, be chosen, you know, elect to serve. And guess what? You do all that and cheerful, there won't be others planted in your stead. That's how it goes. In other words, the work rolls on no matter who, right?
Yeah. Is it your choice to participate or not? Yeah. But isn't it more fun, Susan, to participate?
I do think it's fun. I always think when I've got the right calling, I know it's right because I'm having so fun doing it.
Yeah. Even a calling and also the other stuff, right? That's not even part of your calling. It's just fun to, you know, be part of the work somehow.
Yeah, it is all of those things.
All right, well, that's another sobering day. There's so many sobering
We've had some sobering ones, and it only gets a little bit worse as we move on to the extermination order and Joseph a prisoner for Christ's sake. But if we can hang in there, we'll soon be in Nauvoo.
Yeah. I was telling Susan, I was listening to some of her old lectures from class, and I was just getting all worked up, and it's pretty intense stuff with the persecution in Missouri. And I'm going to be nice to them because they're my neighbor. But, yeah. All right, so we'll do the last two verses of Ye Elders of Israel.
Oh, wonderful.
The harvest is great and the laborers are few, but if we're united, we all things can do. We'll gather the wheat from the midst of the tares and bring them from bondage, from sorrows and snares. O Babylon, O Babylon, we bid thee farewell. We're going to the mountains of Israel to dwell. Ephraim to dwell, sorry. We'll go to the poor like our captain of old, and visit the weary, the hungry and cold. We'll cheer up their hearts with the news that he bore, and point them to Zion and life evermore. O Babylon, O Babylon, we bid thee farewell. We're going to the mountains of Ephraim to dwell. All right, guys, thanks for being here. As always, I'm Clayton Pixton.
I'm Susan Easton Black. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and we will see you next time.